At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network
on News Talk.
Nike is one of the best-known clothing brands in the world. It's been made famous by its clever marketing campaigns and its partnerships with some of the world's top athletes. This year has been a bit difficult, with the shares down more than a third so far in 2022. And joining me now for more on the business of Nike is News Talk's Deputy Business Editor, Gavin McLaughlin. Gavin, good morning.
Morning, Pat.
Tell us how all this began. Who founded Nike? How did it come about?
It was two guys called Bill Bowerman and Phil Knight. So Bowerman was an athletics coach at the University of Oregon, and Phil Knight was one of the athletes he coached. So basically what happened was Bowerman thought the shoes, the running shoes his athletes were using, were just terrible. And he kind of started fiddling around with new designs in his house to see, can they be improved? And Phil Knight is kind of one of the guinea pigs for these new designs, and they end up becoming business partners. Blue Ribbon Sports is what Nike was originally called. It's formed in 1964. So what they started off as was as importers of Japanese footwear, basically, that they thought was superior to the American stuff. And eventually the relationship evolves to the point where the Japanese agree to manufacture some of Bowerman's designs. Mm-hmm. And what was called the Nike Cortez is the shoe that gives them their big breakthrough, really.
Now, where did the name Nike come from? And you can clear up for once and for all how it should be pronounced. Because some people say Nike as in bike, and some people say Nike as in spiky.
Yeah, well, it is. It's Nike as in spiky, two syllables. I'm sure I will call it Nike at some stage during this report. That is always what I have called it, but it is called Nike. Where it came from is a guy called Jeff Johnson, who was the first ever employee. And when it came to the point that the company was going to start doing its own shoes rather than just distributing those made by other people, they needed a brand name. Phil Knight wanted to call it Dimension 6. Peregrine was another person's suggestion, but this guy Jeff Johnson came up with Nike, who's the Greek goddess of victory. And he goes in basically and says, "Guys, I've got it, Nike." And the reaction sort of is, "What's that?" But it stuck, and they decided basically it was the best option. Yeah, they had
and
come
still
up with
the confusion about how to pronounce it, it reigns. Now, no mistaking though the logo, where did that come from?
Well, that was a woman called Carolyn Davidson, who was a graphic design student. Phil Knight had gotten to know her. She'd done some work on posters and other things. So similarly to needing a new name, they also needed a new logo when they were branching out by themselves. And she came up with the swoosh, as they call it, the tick mark. And the idea was it was supposed to denote movement. And also it's meant to sort of resemble a wing, like the wings of the goddess Nike. Now, interestingly, they didn't pay her very much for it. Phil Knight told Bloomberg the story.
Yeah, it was a graphic arts student at Portland State who needed money.
Okay.
And we said, we'll pay you $2 an hour to practice, you know, to get some designs. And she spent 17 and a half hours on that.
Wow. Okay. Well, so $35, that's pretty good. Okay. So
it did have a happy ending. I hope you had that.
You gave her some stock.
When we went public, we gave her 500 shares of stock, and she has not sold a single share, and it's over $1 million now.
Wow, that's pretty good.
That is pretty good, isn't it? That was the co-founder, Phil Knight, on how they got their logo for $35, plus another million when they had loads of millions to give away. Now, one of the big reasons for their success has been their endorsement deals with athletes.
Yeah, so Adidas and Puma would have been around before these guys, and Adidas in particular would have had a head start in being perceived as cool. So how do you go about remedying that? Well, a good way is to associate yourself with cool people. And for Nike, the breakthrough really was when they did a deal with the basketball player Michael Jordan. Jordan was only a young up-and-comer. He wasn't particularly interested in them. He preferred Adidas. But Nike managed to win him over. I'm going to play you this clip now from the Netflix series The Last Dance, which explains how Michael Jordan came to partner with Nike and launch the Air Jordan shoe range in collaboration with them.
In the early 80s, Nike was, for the most part, a track shoe company. Michael didn't even want to be at Nike.
I couldn't even get him to get on the damn plane and go visit the campus. So I called his parents.
And my mother said, you're going to go listen. You may not like it, but you're going to go listen.
Mom, I don't want to hear her. I know what I want to do. I am not going to Nike's, Mom. I said, Michael, you have to give him an opportunity.
And she made me get on that plane and go listen. Go into that meeting not wanting to be there. Nike made this big pitch. My father said, you got to be a fool for not taking this deal. This is the best deal.
Back then, the best guys might have gotten like $100,000 or so. And he got probably $250,000. It was like, well, you would pay him what? A young rookie that's done nothing? You must be out of your mind.
When I negotiated the Nike deal, I said to him, you're a small company, and if you want Michael Jordan, he's got to have his own shoe line. Nike just come out with this new technology for their running shoes called Air Soles. And obviously Michael played in the air. So I kind of got it. We're going to call it Air Jordan.
And Jordan, that's got a pretty good ring to it. I'm your idol, the highest title,
numero uno. I'm not a quarter. Nike's expectation when we signed the deal was that at the end of year four, they hoped to sell $3 million worth of Air Jordans. In year one, we sold 126 million. I get paid.
126 million as distinct from 3 million, which was the ambition. That's an extract from the Last Dance series on Netflix, dealing with that transformative deal that Nike did with Michael Jordan. So, what has gone wrong with the share price recently?
It's two interrelated issues in the main. I think China is one and COVID-related factory closures is the other. So China is an important market for them. Obviously, it has a massive potential, but the COVID situation there is not good, and there are concerns about the strength of the economy generally. COVID has also meant, from time to time, as it's kind of, the waves have come and gone, Nike have had to close factories, and that's left them short of inventory. So they've admitted, basically, they haven't had enough stuff to meet market demand. So it's a tough year for the share price. But the good news is, I suppose, it's still at levels we would have seen in 2019. The basic financials have been fine, really. But there is uncertainty now with the cost of living crisis as well. And the market maybe is a bit less ebullient about the company.
So how would you say things are looking for the future?
Well, I think the market trend is towards more casual clothing. We've seen that in a business and work context where casual wear is more accepted. More generally, there's this trend of at leisure, as it's called, where people go around in sports clothes as sort of casual everyday wear. Yoga pants are everywhere these days, as we all know. So that will help them, although they do have a lot of competition. The other thing they've been looking to do is to do more of what's called direct-to-consumer sales. So what that means is to sell more of their stuff themselves through their own website or app, rather than have people go to lifestyle sports, for example. Now, the idea, seemingly, is that even though this means you have the expense of processing and shipping out orders, it's better for the company's margins than sort of selling all their stuff to retailers who are getting discounts for buying in bulk. So increasingly the goal is to have the relationship with the consumer themselves, whether it's on the Nike app or in the Nike stores, and cut out the middlemen. CEO John Donahoe explained the plan to CNBC.
Consumers want to get what they want, when they want it, how they want it. So in almost every case, they start their shopping or their exploration on a mobile device or digitally. And in some cases, they buy it digitally and have it shipped home. Other cases, they may buy it or reserve it digitally and try it on or pick it up in store, online to offline, and we have a very strong presence there. And other times, they want to go to the store to try it on or to browse and explore. And so we gear our entire focus and our entire offense, as we call it here, to being able to serve that consumer regardless of which of those routes they want to go. And that served us very well as retail's opened up and closed down, as period of work from home or come back to work. We've been able to be with consumer wherever the consumer is and meet their demands how they want to do it on their terms.
That's Nike CEO John Donahoe there on how they're looking to have relationships directly with consumers. two other advantages, I suppose, of that is one, you get access to customer data, which you can use sort of to target ads at them. And also you just have more control over how your product is displayed. So this strategy seems to be going well. And as more and more shopping moves online, we know that's happening. Nike would seem to be well placed to benefit. I think the China thing will probably resolve in time. In cultural terms, the cool factor probably isn't quite what it was. They don't have an athlete on the books like peak Michael Jordan or peak Tiger Woods. But people like that don't come around too often, I suppose.
Here's a question for you, Gavin. Would you buy shoes, trainers or whatever online, or football boots or whatever?
Definitely.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Because one of the issues, and I've got a number of Nike products, and they're the same number, like the size would be 43 or 44, whatever it is, but they're not the same size.
So
identical numbers, different sizes. So that's the issue I would have with shoes.
Yeah, they might be coming from different factories or something. Do they allow you to return them back for free and get them replaced? Yeah. Or
they do, but still it's a pain. You know, if you want your trainers, you want them now.
Yeah, well, I understand that, I suppose. I don't know. I think we're just so used to living so much of our lives online. Maybe you come to view going into the shop as a bit of a pain or whatever. So the question of free returns is a really interesting one in this fashion e-commerce, because obviously it's a big cost to the companies
and
to do that.
Are changing that. We're told that you're going to have to pay.
You're going to have to pay now. Yeah. So that can pose an issue. But, you know, I think it's the direction of travel is clear. I wouldn't have a problem buying stuff online.
All right, Gavin, thank you very much for joining us. News Talk's Deputy Business Editor, Gavin McLaughlin.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.